Okay, good evening, everybody. And we are with this. The first class is the Mitzvah Chabura, and the second class is Tehillim. So, a few things I'd like to, some handouts. Yeah. And Chad sent this around last week. So, there you go. Okay, we're going to do four mitzvahs tonight. And three of them are really very, very interconnected. And what's interesting is that the Sefer HaChinuch counts what the first three that we're going to discuss as three separate mitzvahs. And Ramban disagrees. Ramban thinks that these three mitzvahs are really one mitzvah. All right, this has come up many times in our study of the Sefer HaChinuch, which is maybe one of the most accessible of the lists of the 613 mitzvahs, right? The reason why I say it's most accessible is because it is arranged according to the order of the Torah, right? So that makes it really quite, and each parsha, it gives you the list of what mitzvahs are in that parsha. The Rambam lists the mitzvahs by category. So if you wanted to look up, let's say, the mitzvah of honoring your parents, it's not, you have to really have an index to figure out where you're going to find that. Okay. Now, truth be told, that if you want to work with the Sefer HaChinuch, you have to know which parsha it says to honor your parents. And even then, it's not so simple because there are three parshas, Yisro, Kedoshim, and Veschanan. And you have to know which one of those three he treats it. And he doesn't always treat it in the first time it appears. Okay. The actual list of the Sefer HaChinuch is exactly the same as the Rambam's list. He clearly just took it straight out of the Rambam, the list itself. The order, of course, is different because the Sefer HaChinuch orders it by place in the Torah. So the Sefer HaChinuch discusses Puravu first because that's the first mitzvah in the Torah. Okay. Plus you've come across so many examples so far of mitzvahs that the Rambam counts, that the Ramban does not count. Mitzvahs that the Rambam doesn't count, that the Ramban counts. Right? The mitzvah, for instance, to remember Har Sinai, right, is really not counted by too many of the listings of the mitzvahs. Says the Torah, you should remember the day you stood at Har Sinai. It sounds like a mitzvah, right? So hardly anybody counts the mitzvah to remember what God did to Miriam in the desert. No. Only Ramban really is the main one who considers that a mitzvah, to remember what God did to Miriam in the desert. So yeah, I can go on and on with examples. The three here in this parasha is as follows. There is a barley offering that is brought on the second day of Pesach. There is a wheat offering brought on the first day of Shavuos. In between, we're counting the 49 days of the Omer. Right? We discussed already whether it's a Torah law or a rabbinic law because we're not bringing the korbanos on the two ends, right? So maybe what happens in the middle becomes rabbinic, but that's not the question here. Question here is that the offering is barley on Pesach because in the Middle East, barley is the only crop that's growing at this time. Okay, but when we say barley, barley has two other grains that have very similar characteristics, and that is rye and oats. Rye, oats, and barley have the same similar characteristics, while wheat and spelt, they grow earlier. While wheat and spelt share other similar characteristics. I'm just telling you that this Maseches Challah says this about what can join together in to make a chiyuv of challah. Let's put that aside right now, because in some way all five grains can join together in certain circumstances. But I'm not going to go there now. If you have rye flour and oat flour, you can mix them in water and make challah and have to pull out challah. I'm talking if you have doughs, five different doughs, oat dough, rye dough, wheat dough, barley dough, and spelt dough, you can only join spelt and wheat as a dough, and only rye, oats, and barley. Let me just, I'm sorry for that tangent. The second day of Pesach, we offer a barley offering because barley is the only thing growing in Israel at that time. And you won't find wheat yet. And the whole Middle East, wheat doesn't grow in March and April. You know, in the seventh plague, it says the hail destroyed the barley, but did not destroy the wheat because the wheat didn't grow yet. Okay. Torah says that until you bring that offering on the second day of Pesach, now I'm going to tell you a law that you may be familiar with, all the grain since last year Pesach is called chadosh. If you have chadosh asim in the Torah, chadosh flour. And this, once that offering is brought, all that chadosh now is called yashan. Okay. Sometimes you see in the pizzas, they do. Yeah. All our pizza is made with yashan flour. Oh, right. At this time of year, that's nonsense. All flour is yashan. There's no one's going to a store buying flour from grain that grew after the second day of Pesach just a few weeks ago. No such thing, right? Yes.
The old wheat is small and the new wheat is big, right? That's the difference. When you look at the wheat to differentiate between
if you want yashan and to. Well, usually, we're not looking at wheat. We're looking at flour, usually. We want to know, this is flour made from wheat that grew when? Wheat that was harvested when? Now, the fact is that in America, such a large nation that you can harvest all year in different places. In Israel, we just harvest only one time of year. But in America, because there's so many different types of regions, and so it may cause for a bigger problem of yashan, of chadosh. Then we used to be in America, they stored wheat and flour for a long time. Your bread you're buying now is from wheat that was harvested 2-3 years ago. Right? So it was like, all flour is yashan. Not a question. But here's the one I wanted to get back about the three mitzvahs. The Torah says that until that offering is brought, right, you recognize the psukim, it's this week's parsha. It's a common laning. It's laned on Pesach, it's laned both the first two days of Sukkot. So, and not this week, next week's parsha. Right? No, this week's parsha, this week's Amor. I'm sorry, yeah. So, Torah says that until you bring that offering, you may not have bread. Holy is parched corn, parched kernels, and caramel is more of a caramelay. It's more than parched. It's more edible than parched corn, but it's three different parts of the grain, three different ways that people eat the grain. It's the same stalk of grain. But it says, don't eat the lechem until you offer this. Don't eat the kali, the kernels, the parched kernels. People used to take the kernels from the grain, roast them and put in honey, and then they would eat it like that.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, you had it? Okay, so the lechem, the kali, and then this charmel is somewhere in between lechem and kali. Don't eat any of those until the day where this is brought. Now, we're not bringing the offering anymore, so just after the day itself. So, itsumo shel yom. Yeah, just by the, and when the second, you have to wait for the second day of Pesach to be over for all that to be, maybe someone's outside who doesn't know the code. Thanks.
I remember.
You got in?
So
the Rambam and the Sefer HaChinuch count three mitzvahs here. Don't eat lechem until you bring the offering. Don't eat kali until you bring the offering. Don't eat caramel until you. And then the Ramban says, no, it's one mitzvah. Don't eat any type of produce from this grain. So that is it's a common dispute that exists It's a common dispute that exists in other formats as well.
Why do we even have this?
So the Gemara discusses that I might have thought that it's kind of a normal way of eating it. And this is like the Derech Harai, you know, you can feed your animals before you tithe. So maybe it doesn't apply. Maybe it's not. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. So Luzu Afzu. Okay. But the point is that there are those who count three different mitzvahs here and those who count one. And if you make three mitzvahs out of this, if you say one, so I have to make up two other mitzvahs. Okay. I just told you two mitzvahs. Ramban counts remembering Har Sinai and remembering when Hashem did to Miriam. So now you've made up these two mitzvahs. Now, this is not the only place where they disagree on these things, but what they all seem to agree on is that there are 613 when the day is over. When everything is said and done, there's always going to be 613 mitzvahs. They may have sharp disagreements on how to come up to that number 613. We've spoken about this.
When is the first time that 613 is important?
It's fascinating. It needs a shear unto itself here, but I'll say it's a Gemara at the end of Maseches Makos that says that there are 365 for each day of the year. So it's like there's a mitzvah for every day of the year for every limb of your body. Right. 248 limbs of the body, 248 asay and 365 los asay. So, you know, it's not only is it sacrosanct that there has to be 613, but that breakdown it has to fit also. It's a pretty much a landslide. It's like 60% los asay and 40% asay. So that is, but that's what they always have in common is that they come up to this number. Okay. So our study of the Sefer Achinu is, so I see some here, people here have been, you know, with us all year, and we'll recall some of these, like the things that the Sefer HaChinuch raises are sometimes they're the Minchas Chinuch. Yeah. So the Sefer HaChinuch was written about 750 years ago by a man to his young child to teach him what the mitzvahs are. The Minchas Chinuch, that 150 years ago, was written just to use the simple text of the Sefer HaChinuch, but to elaborate significantly on what is meant. And he often brings up questions no one, you think, did anybody in the last 2,000 years ask this question? So I'll bring up one from this past week's parsha, is that the Torah says that you should fast on Yom Kippur, and then it says on the ninth from the evening until the evening. So it seems to be a problem. The fast is not on the ninth, it's on the 10th, from the evening to the evening. Right? When the fast is over, it's the 11th now. Right? So why does it say the fast on the ninth in the evening? It says, but she mina erev ad erev. Okay, so this is not, I don't need the Minchas Chinuch to help me with this. This is a Gemara. The Gemara says that the fast actually does start on the ninth, because there's something called Tosefes Kedusha, to add on to the Kedusha of Yom Kippur by starting the fast before the fast starts. And this thing called Tosefes Kedusha extends to Shabbos. Shabbos starts on Friday, right? Especially this time of year, you can make Shabbos very early now, but I'm talking about every Shabbos. Every Shabbos starts on Friday. When are you lighting the candles? Look out the window. It's still light outside. It's Friday. If someone would perform a wedding at that exact moment she's lighting the candles, they would write the previous day as a date on the ksuba, right? Right. So we start Shabbos on Friday and we end every Shabbos on Sunday. Look out the window when you're making Havdalah and you'll see it's night. So we start on Friday, we finish on Sunday. So here's what the Torah, here's what the Gemara says about this. We start Yom Kippur on Friday, on the 9th, and we end on the 11th. By the time Yom Kippur is over, it's already the next day, right? So the Sefer HaChinuch asks this, it sounds like almost like a klutz kasha. What happens if your bar mitzvah is the 11th of Tishrei? Now, it's an academic question because the custom is that children fast the year before their bar and bas mitzvah, right? But that's because of a custom. If you're not bar or bas mitzvah, you don't have to fast on Yom Kippur. Again, the cut according to the Torah. Right? Everything a child before 12 for a girl and 13 for a boy does before their bar and bas mitzvah is on the cheshbon of the parents. Because the parents have to make sure that their children learn about the mitzvahs, because if they don't know the mitzvahs, they're not going to wake up on their 13th and 12th birthday and say, oh, let me do this mitzvah. They're not going to know what they're doing and they're not going to want to do it. But that's the cheshbon on the parents, not on the child. So, except possibly the mitzvah of kibud av v'em, but here is what he says. Listen to this amazing chiddush. He says, if your birthday is the 11th of Tishrei, then you have a Torah obligation to fast at the end of the fast. Isn't that a chiddush that you didn't have to fast at the beginning of the fast because you weren't bar mitzvah yet?
Yeah, that's right. The Tosefes can
kick in on its own,
right?
Without being grandparent clause and from the start.
Like a Tosefes.
Yeah, it's such a but he discusses things like this. I would say in all of our studies, we're doing Minchas Chinuch now since COVID. I mean, this is like the third or fourth year we're doing this. I would say, and then let's get into the Sfiras HaOmer. That probably the single case that I think he asked the furthest reaching question was in the mitzvah of Gid HaNashe. Remember, Gid HaNashe is the sciatic nerve that you have to pull out of the animal's thigh, right? It's not kosher, right? So remember his question? It was, if someone is so starving that they have to eat a person, do they have to pull out the big nerve that's coming out of them? Wow, that is crazy. The fact is that the Minchas Chinuch was not the first to ask that question. It's a big Chuvas HaRashba. So why did the rabbis do these kind of things? Because they want to have the answer. They want to discuss anything that could possibly be on the table. And nothing's off the table for this guy.
They're being surveyed. They're not determining the precise parameter of
correct. Correct. I remember a Friedrich Rebbe. That means the Rebbe before of Menachem Schneerson. He said he wrote a commentary to Yavamas where he asks on this big Mishnah towards the end of the Masechta. There's about 100 cases of certain marriages that certainly in the history of all mankind, not one of these marriages has ever taken place. It's a series of two of one type marrying two of another type, where it's two brothers marrying two sisters, where one brother is deaf, but and one sister is deaf, and the other sister is a shota, and brothers are shota. It's just so many hechatimtzes, and the Rebbe said, I doubt if any of these have ever come true, have ever been actually the case. But that's the nature of our learning. We're asking questions like, and I find in the Talmud, it's often the same rabbis who are asking these kind of questions. Right? Remember these two names, Rabbi Yirmiyah and Rabbi Zeira. Two of them are often asking the most amazing questions that, of course, have never happened. But then you start to get a reputation where the Rebbe might think that you're just trying to be funny. One time Rabbi Yirmiyah went overboard. Remember the question? And he was thrown out of his yeshiva for it. And then when he later on the Rebbe heard that he was serious and he invited him back in. But the question was that if you find certain objects near what looks to be the place where they came from, so you have to do a little inquiry to see if it belongs to the person of that where that place is. So the Gemara discusses if you find a chick, not the chicken, but the chick, right? Yeah. You find a chick near a dovecot where the doves are laying the eggs for the chicks, and so the chick can't really fly yet. and the chick walks slowly, slowly, how far can the chick get? So it says, if it got 50 amos, which is about 75 feet away from the dovecote, if it's within this 50 amos, it belongs to the owner of the dovecote. If it's past the 50 amos, then the finder can keep it, right? So that's where you're hearing me ask the question, what happens if one leg is within 50 amos and the other leg is beyond 50 amos when you find it?
You make it work.
So what do you do? He picks it up right at that moment. You should say, shoe it out past the 50 amos and keep it, right? But that's when he picked it up. That's what it was. And he was thrown out of yeshiva because he asked such a klutz kash. Suppose this. Wait a second. There are some other Gemaras where it's not even Rabbi Yirmiyahu or Rabbi Zeira, but just like the Gemara itself asks the question. If someone dies in between two cities, Daf Yomi is going to be discussing this in the next few days. Someone dies in between two cities, you have to measure which city is closer to, and the elders of that city have to, it's called Eglarufa. So the Gemara says, how do you determine if the person is dead? So you have to, the different parts of the body that you have to check. Some say you have to check the nose, some say you have to check the neck, some say you have to check it down at the navel. So the Gemara asks this question. What happens if his nose is closer to one city, but his navel is closer to another city? Who is this, Gulliver? I mean, what? His nose is closer to one city, his navel is closer to another city? And the Gemara actually addressed the question. He said, well, it's the machlokas, what you think is the lifeblood of the person. So you measure from there, Tafka. So when Rav Yirmiyah, who asks a lot of such questions, you get a reputation. So I'm sorry, you don't get the benefit of the doubt for asking such a crazy question, right? Okay, so
have you put branded and heart stop branded?
That's right. Yeah, they had, the Talmud, they work with respiration. Brain dead is a more recent eventuality.
So heartbeat or respiration, now we have heartbeat or brain.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So let me just review what we did until now of Sfiras HaOmer, is that the din of changing over from Chadash to Yashan to the Rambam is three separate mitzvahs, three different things you shouldn't eat until that offering is brought or until that whole day is over. And now all the flour that used to be called Chadash is now called Yashan flour. And now you can, right now will be Chadash next October, November, December, is whatever grain grew from the second day of Pesach now. Right? If barley, for instance, is harvested from grain that, here's the rule, took root after the second day of Pesach, right? Then what that produces is going to now be Chadash until next second day of Pesach. Okay? The wheat you're eating now in Israel, right, is from wheat that grew last year. Wheat doesn't grow yet in Israel. Right? So the flour you're going to make for bread now from wheat, most human products are made from wheat, grain products. Now, but you see, sometimes people can't process wheat; they can process oat and spelt, oats and rye. So then you don't have this concern. Okay, so you have three types of food that you shouldn't be eating: lechem, koli, becharmel. To the Rambam is three mitzvahs. To the Ramban is one mitzvah. Right? Okay. Let's now.
Does everyone agree that? Browsers
want
to read. Everyone agree that the Risa? Does everyone agree that
Easter is the Risa? Yes. Now, here's another thing about this is that when you have three mitzvahs like this coming from one text, so this is known in the halacha as something called Lav Shebichlolos. One statement that branches out to more than one mitzvah. There are numerous examples of this. if you have, you wouldn't have, let's say, three different mitzvahs in the Torah saying the same thing, right? You wouldn't say that means that mitzvah is three different, to be counted three different ways. There's one exception to this, is that the Torah says you shall not sieve a kid in its mother's milk. Most of Ashel Liba Chalevi Mo. And the Sefer HaChinuch counts, like the Rambam, three different mitzvahs out of that. Right? It says three different times in the Torah, Mishpatim, Kisisa, and Re'ei, do not cook milk and meat together. So that's the Iker mitzvah, because that's the pshat. But we learn from our tradition that there are two other mitzvahs here, besides not cooking milk and meat together, not eating milk and meat together, and also not even deriving any benefit from milk and meat together. Okay. So that is one text that gives you three different mitzvahs, because they're mentioned three different places. Our pasuk is Lechem Lekoli v'Charmel, is one text that the Rambam says, well, it's three different words. Each one is its own iser. Okay? So Lav Shebechlolos is, the most famous example of this is, and the Rambam counts them as separate mitzvahs. Lav Shebechlolos is Lo Sochlu Al Hadam. Which in pshat means don't drink blood. But the Gemara in Sanhedrin derives a whole series of mitzvahs from here. Right? And we'll see what it's actually also in this week's parsha. That's the only reason why I'm mentioning it. Is there's just a klal, is that there's no malchus for it. There's no punishment for violating a law of Shabbat Lalos. Possibly because it resembles, if I know I'm saying something now that's not going to be so comprehensible, but it sounds like a little like a hasra suffix, right? Because how can you warn someone about something that's not standing there in front of him, right?
You could just put the
pasuk. Okay, I'm not going to drink blood, that I get. But you're telling me that this pasuk teaches me four or five other things, so I don't see it. When you're warning someone not to do an aveira in the Torah, the warning has to be quite clear and evident that this is what he's telling me not to do based on what's written in the pasuk. Yeah, you can't punish on that. You can't punish on that. That's known as hasra safek. This is why Reish Lakish famously says in the Gemara certain violations of the Torah that you can't punish because there's no way to warn the person about the violation, right? The Torah says, don't leave over any of the Korban Pesach to the morning. Whatever's left over has to be burnt. So if someone doesn't burn what was left over, there's no, you can't, how can you warn that? You can't warn, don't, because he's doing nothing. He's just sitting there doing nothing. So there's someone else who says the reason why there's no malchus is because it's a lav shein b'maisa. It's by sitting there. If I say, I swear I'm going to eat this falafel before it gets dark. Right? I'm taking a shvuah myself. I'm going to eat this falafel before it gets dark. Right? And you know, the clock is ticking away. So what you want to tell me probably is something like, listen, you know, of course, you better eat the falafel. Otherwise, you're going to be in violation of the Torah. Right, but I'm just sitting there and letting the time go away, and right. So I violated my oath by doing nothing, right? But there's also it's a very difficult kind of warning. The nature of the warning is if I say I won't eat this falafel before it gets dark. And then you watch me take it to my mouth. I'm about to chew into it. That's a good, that's a hasra. That's a warning you can give me. You can say, don't eat that. If you eat that, you'll violate your oath. That you can tell me. That's a regular warning. Okay. I know we've been, we really have been introducing for such a long time. Here, let me give you this.
you can't mix the milk and meat itself. I went to Italia's and I had leftovers and I took it home and then some Parmesan cheese and I left it in the garbage and I seen cheese in the lid and I freak out. I got to keep it away. Is it allowed to even combine them?
No, the love is to cook them together. Oh. Right. And the prohibition in cooking is limited, but I'm not that's too much of a tangent here. I just wanted to, I brought it up to give an example of something that's written. It's one statement, but it branches out to more than one violation. Usually, the Rambam does not consider that violation to be worthy of malchus because the nature of the warning is very difficult to give. But when it comes to milk and meat, the tradition is so strong that each pasuk is teaching something different that is prohibited. One, not to cook them together. One, not to eat them together. And one, not to derive benefit if they are cooked together. Now, the fact is that if someone would just take a slice of cheese, and a slice of beef bologna, not just chicken, but bologna beef, and put them together in a sandwich and eat them together, that does not violate the Torah. Because it's not cooked. It has to be cooked together. It has to be roasted or cooked or fried or toasted or melted. Or...
the beef was wrong, but not bologna.
So if it was cooked by itself, but it wasn't. It has to be cooked together with the cheese in order to violate the Torah. This is often a question for French cooks. I once converted a French cook, and he does all this. Everything is with cheese. All the meat is with cheese, butter, and so he asked if how can you keep the job now as a Jew. So I said they have to only give you recipes that are chicken or game with milk, right? But there are three animals that cannot be cooked with dairy products: cow, sheep, and a goat. All other animals you can't. You can't eat it. You can't eat deer meat with cheese because that's a rabbinic prohibition. It doesn't violate the Torah. But cooking them together is only the dairy products from these three animals and the meat products from these three animals. It's crossing over, of course. It's forbidden to cook cow milk with goat meat. It's forbidden to cook goat cheese with sheep, with lamb meat. Okay, so good. That really covered us for Lechem Mekali B'Charmel. That gets us now into the nitty gritty of Sfira Songs.
So,
okay.
Can I just ask? Sure. Well, ideally, we're allowed to eat meat and dairy together.
No. That would be a rabbinic violation.
It's rabbinic.
A rabbinic violation, right? It doesn't violate the Torah, but we put fences around the Torah so that we don't, and sometimes we treat the rabbinic law more harshly than the Torah law. Because the rabbinic law is someone might say, it's just rabbinic. Okay, I'll be okay. But the Torah law, we know people are going to take more seriously. But the rabbinic law we treat very harshly. But I'm just saying is that it's always important to know what is a Torah law and what's not, because we have to know what to paskin halacha. Someone asks you a question about the fleshik spoon and inside the hot coffee, and there are. One of the first things we always ask when responding to a question is it violating the Torah law or is it violating the rabbinic law?
Violating rabbinic law, not Torah law.
Right. The only way to violate the Torah law with milk and meat is meat from one of these three animals, goat, lamb, cow, milk from one of those three animals. And so I told him, since I don't want you to lose your job, but you would not be allowed to cook beef with cheese and milk and butter and things like that, because you can't violate Torah laws, right?
Question.
But it's not rabbinically forbidden to cook deer with cheese. No, you can do it l'chatchila. In other words, you might have thought, well, maybe you shouldn't do that because he may come to taste it while he's cooking. No, You don't have to lose your job over that. It's not maybe not something for the rest of us here to do. But question.
What if he uses a non-Jew to do the work?
Even better, but part of what he had been doing for years was making all these cheese fondues and everything else, and so we was able to maintain the job for some years. Okay, all right. So you see at the bottom it says mitzvahs sfiras haomer. Okay, the Sefer Achinuch Paskins at the end of the turn to the second page. At the end of the first paragraph, I'll read the words with you. He says, mitzvah lemimne yomi, mitzvah lemimne shvui. Why is he saying it in that language? He says, mitzvah lemimne, you found it? Okay, it says, Tav Samach Zayin at the top. Mitzvah lemimne yomi, mitzvah lemimne shvui. Okay, that's the expression of the Gemara. See it? That's the expression the Gemara gives. Okay, you see it at the top? Three lines from the top. Tav Samach Zayin at the top. Just turn out to the first page. Okay. First page says Tav Samach Vav. The second page is Tav Samach Zayin. Three lines on the top. It says it's a mitzvah to count the days and it's a mitzvah to count the weeks. Of course, we've been doing that all along, right? So this is actually opens up a discussion because the Gemara seems to point by discussing a dispute that if you count the days and the weeks, that means that you think that this mitzvah is fulfilling a Torah law today. And it's a Doraisa. It's a Torah law to count the Omer today. Most commentaries say it's not. It's not a Torah law to count the Omer. I would say Asher Kedishanim Tfosav Tzivanim. Yeah, it's written in the Torah, right? And yeah, so it's exactly like the mitzvah of carrying a lulav after the first day of Sukkot. The Gemara refers to both mitzvahs the same expression, which is Zecher LeMikdash. Zecher LeMikdash. What way is it a Zecher LeMikdash? Because the Torah says, bring a barley offering on the second day of Pesach, count 49 days, and then bring a wheat offering on the first day of Shavuos. In the absence of those two offerings, the counting in the middle is not a Torah law. It's just a Zecher LeMikdash. You want to remember the Beis Hamikdash? Okay, count. And say, yeah, Shekhar Shana. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, and we want you to count it to remember. Yeah, of course we have. Of course we count. The rabbis want us to remember the Beis Hamikdash.
That's why there's that added part in the bracha.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's why we always say, Rachamani Yasirman Masavados Beis Hamikdash Bim Kazalayan Min Sab. Exactly. That's why people are very mocked to say that line. So that when we say in the mitzvah, that we know we're saying it. Because otherwise there's an obvious, if we felt it as a Torah law and not, I'd love to see what they're going to do when the Beis Hamikdash is rebuilt. But at that time we won't have this problem anymore. Is that if this was a Torah law, every night we would, outside of Israel, every night we would count. Two nights.
Yeah. What?
What's wrong with
it? It's not like happening, we don't say,
I know, but if we felt it was a Torah law, just like when in Israel, when you count the Omer, it's Chol HaMoed, right? Second day of Pesach. Now, when I count the Omer at my second Seder, right? Why am I making a second Seder outside of it? That's the one thing my kids in Israel say they miss. They only have one Seder. So when in America, outside of Israel, when you're counting the Omer at the Seder, you're having another day Yom Tov tomorrow. Why? Because of this standard we've been keeping called Sveka Diyoma. I keep a second day of Yontif out of the deference to the ancient custom of not when we didn't know which day was Yontif, which day wasn't. So we kept the second day as if though that was the first day.
Because it's safe on me, but.
So, well, Zefo.
Not a second. It's really Chol HaMoed. And with Sechel and Mikdash, therefore, you wouldn't do it on, it's not doing it on Yom Tov. You're considering it as a Chol HaMoed.
I understand. So the first night of Pesach, I'm counting the first of the Omer, no doubt, because I know what day it is. But the night after the first day of Pesach. But then the second day, I should count one and two.
The counting is first
day. No, but if I kept the second day of Yontif, I have to keep 2 days.
No, it's about in the second day of Yontif, you don't say Musaf, you don't say Yontif Musaf, then Yontif Korban, and then the Chol HaMoed Korban. Let's say Sukkot.
That's true.
Sukkot, why? Because it's Zion to Yontif to say, you know, so it's the same thing. It's comparable to the Sphira. How can
no, but on the second day of the Sphira, right? Maybe today is the, because that the second, when we start Chol HaMoed.
We know we're doing most of.
I know. So when we start Chol HaMoed here, and then it's the second night, right? So when Chol HaMoed starts, it's supposed to be the first night of the Omer. So I'm going to do the second because that's what I know. That's what they do in Israel. And let me do the first. Anyway, this is what the Baal HaMoed says. The reason why we don't make up this first, this counting 2 days each night is because it's the Rabbanim. We don't keep 9 days of Hanukkah. We do keep 9 days of Sukkot. We keep an extra day of 2 days of Shmini Atzeres. We keep 8th day and the 9th day. But we can separate Shmini Atzeres and Simchas Torah here, but they don't do in Israel. So in Israel, Shmini Atzeres is Simchas Torah. So that's one of the functions of it. Okay, so he says that. So that's the.
Why would Mishra Sinok say that we don't do that? Because he thinks it's derisive.
So that's the Sefer Nechum until now, because this is a very famous problem with the new Machon Yerushalayim. This is the Machon Yerushalayim Sefer Nechum.
Yeah.
He found a gross misprint. Of the traditional Sefer HaChinuch that read that it's d'oraisa like the Rambam, mm-hmm. But then he found the original text. It says very beferish.
Yeah, it's
an imitation that it's rabbinic in nature. So I think we discussed this maybe even 2 weeks ago when we started this. Is that to the Rambam not having the Beis HaMikdash to bring a korban is just like a technicality. Korban could have been brought. It's just that we didn't do it. You don't need a Beis HaMikdash. You don't need a Beis HaMikdash to bring korban. Yes. That's Rav Soloveitchik's chap in that, whether it's Kitchel L'Shaita or Kitchel L'Shaita. Since the Rambam Paskin's Kitchel L'Shaita, Yerushalayim still has its Kedusha. We didn't bring a korban because it's politically unwise to do so. Yeah, they'll go crazy and start a war if we did that. But it doesn't mean, it means that we just didn't bring it, but we could have. That in itself kicks in that it could be the right side. So we tied that in last time to if you offer a korban out in your backyard to the Rambam, you're violating the Torah. Because you're offering a korban outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Everybody else says, no, that's only a mitzvah when there's a Beis HaMikdash to offer outside of. Right? So the Rambam says, that's just a technicality.
If you think right. The Omer is Ravana, like most people do think, why isn't that like Kelly and why isn't that also?
No, because the Gemara itself asks the question, what happens if they didn't bring the korban in a working Beis HaMikdash? Gemara says, "Itzumo shel yom." It says, "Be'etzem hayom hazeh." The day you have to wait for the whole day to pass,
okay, right.
And then just the passing of the day, which is of course what we rely on today, right? And we even in Chutzlars we do a Sveka Diyoma even on that.
Okay.
Okay. So So this Minchas Chinuch has an additional interest in why in the Rambam's halacha these laws are not found in Hilchos Pesach. They're Hilchos Musar. Hilchos Tmidim
Musar. They make perfect
sense. Yeah, because it's part of the Karban to the Rambam. Right? Yeah. The Rambam, in other words, where are you going to put the laws of Sfiras Omer? There's no Hilchos Sfiras Omer in the Rambam. Right? The Shulchan Aruch puts Hilchos Sfiras Omer right after Hilchos Pesach. Okay. Rambam goes in order of the year. He goes Hilchos Shabbos, Hilchos Rosh Chodesh, and then Hilchos Pesach, and then Sfiras Omer, Shavuos. But the Rambam doesn't put the laws of Sfiras Omer together with the holiday laws. Rambam has a section called Zmanim, right? One of the 14 books. Anyway, it starts with Shabbos, and then Erevin, and Hilchos Yontif, Pesach, right? So that's where you should have Sfira, the laws of Sfira Omer. But the chapter or two, no, he puts it in Tzmidim Musafim because to him it's also interesting. The Rif, on whom the Rambam based much of his work, the Rif, Rav Alfus, Yitzchok Fez, says that he puts the laws of Sfira Omer at the end of Pesachim. Right, the Rif is a halachic compilations straight out of the Masechtas, right? The decision to put on the page of the Talmud at the top of the middle, to put Rashi and Tosfos on the side instead of the Rosh and the Rif, was a decision made by typesetters, but it totally revolutionized the way we study Talmud, because by putting Rashi and Tosfos on the page, it meant that we're not as interested. Let the rabbis discuss the halachic conclusions of Gemaras. What's more important is that you understand the pshat in the Gemara. And instead, Rashi's not a posek. And really, Tosfos is in the Masechtas. There's something called Piskei Tosfos. Tosfos and Rashi are first and foremost interested in giving you the meaning of the Gemara. The Rif, however, was interested in just giving you the halachic conclusions of the Gemara. And the Rif's treatment of Sfiras HaOmer is in the end of Pesachim, not where the laws of Sfiras HaOmer appear. There's no laws of Sfiras HaOmer in Pesachas Pesachim. Where do you find the laws of Sfiras HaOmer? In Pesachas Menachos, yeah. Because the korban that's brought before you start counting the Omer is called a mincha. What's the difference between a mincha and a zebach? They're both offerings. Mincha is grain, and the zebach has blood. Zebach is a goat, sheep, cow, or bird. A mincha doesn't have blood. Mincha could be oil, it could be wine, it could be grain. So lizboach means to slaughter. So it's Meseches Vachim or Mizbeach. Good, but sometimes Mincha goes on the Mizbeach as well. But that's interesting because the main thing that goes on the Mizbeach is the animal.
And, you gotta have a cookie sheet there, so it's not going on the Mizbeach in order to, so it doesn't fall apart. Whereas the meat sits directly on the
For the Mizbeach gets mostly meat. What a mincha is, even if it's a lot of grain, the korban, if you will, of the mincha, is the kohen takes his hand into the grain, whatever the hand can hold, right? And he does this, he takes it and he does this. And whatever is in there, that's what goes on.
You don't mix it with water and make it up.
There's a lot of different things you do with this, usually mixed with oil. So that's all that's going on in Mizbeach, as opposed to some carbonos, you're getting a lot of emurim, and sometimes the whole animal goes on in Mizbeach, if it's an ola or parim hanisrafim, a yontif offerings, or some shlodish offerings, kippur offerings. It's an interesting, it raises an interesting point. The Mizbeach accepts grain offering too. So why are we calling it the Mizbeach after the Zebach? because most of it is the zevach. Anyway, just to close that out is, why do we call the afternoon davening mincha? The korban of the morning and the korban of the afternoon is the exact same thing. That's a mincha. Soles, mincha, lulav Hashemen, mincha. Right? So the karbanos are the same. So why are we calling Tamid Shel Shachar? We're calling that Shachris. Tamid Shel Bein Arbayim, we're calling that mincha. So the answer has nothing to do with grain offerings. It has to do with the fact that when you daven mincha, which is at 12:30 at least, no earlier than 12:30, the sun, right, here's sunrise, the sun is starting to munach, to create shadows on the other direction. So the first Tosfos in Arbi Psachim Samach Mincha. I'm not sure why Tosfos waited to Psachim to say this. Bilas HaMincha is in the fourth parak in Rachas. Should have said something there. Anyway, and the Radak in the Sefer Shorashim says that the afternoon prayer is connected to the word munat, that the sun is starting to tilt.
Was also by the winds changing?
By the afternoon?
I think there was something.
The winds changing, I'm not sure.
Actually, you probably sent to the sun.
Yes. Right, so the Omer is tied into this mincha.
Sun is going towards when we sleep.
See, yeah. Sun put out its light. The minchas Omer, the reason why we call it Sfiras HaOmer is because the amount of barley that is offered in the second day of Pesach is the bulk of 43.2 eggs. If you're wondering, where did you get that number? Because an epha is 432 eggs. That's why, you know, when Rus came home with Vayike Epha Sarim, and their mother said, wow, where did you get it? Because that's a lot for one woman to carry. My mom must have given her a wagon to take it home, but that's a lot. Put 432 eggs in a, you know, and see how much that's the. Like it. So the Torah says to take asiris for Epha, so a tenth of that is, and that's the Shir of Chala. It's if you need that much dough, right? It's an interesting way to remember is the gematria of Chala is amazingly 43. Not 43.2, but right. But so an Omer is the volume of 43.2 eggs of barley. Because that's the amount of barley that's offered on the second day of Pesach, we refer to the Sfiras HaOmer. So it's totally tied into the carbon. Right? Otherwise, we should call it Has Al Sfirat Ha Yomim Bein Pesach LeShavuos. Yeah, something like that. You know, what he says, Sfiras HaOmer, the Sfira of the measure of grain. Okay, so what I'm trying to do here is once again is to show the inextricable connection between the Seder HaAvoda in the Beis HaMikdash and this particular mitzvah. You will find the same thing. The Rav spoke very much about this, about the Lulav and Esrog on Sukkos, because originally the din was only to have it 7 days in the Beis HaMikdash. If you lived in Israel at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, you only carried the Lulav and Esrog on the first day. Then when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, we had to have Zecho LeMikdash, so we said, let's let the Jews carry the Lulav and Esrog all the days.
Well, he talks about recreating every Jew, the experience of actually living in Beis HaMikdash, so what the Yavoda, your experience of what it was like. I think the for questions the Rambam doesn't change the Nusach. That's like what for question what they would have said during Beis HaMikdash.
Oh yes, because
it makes it. Explained it. That's why
he wants it to be to include the roasting And not to include the reclining, because they're
experience of what it's like.
Part of Chayav Adam Nirusas Atzmukilu Tzamim Mitzrayim is also part, is also to remember the experience in the Beis Hamikdash, because the Korban Pesach is the star of the show. And it's also why we say things like Lashana Babi Rishalayim, or the Ma'alos, the 15 Ma'alos. The last one is Banalanu is Beis Abachira, right. The last one is that it's all about the Seder of Voda, which was, Halel Nirtza tries to plug into also. Okay, well,
there were 15 steps in the Mikra, so
Exactly. It plugs into the, it's as much as possible to plug into the experience of the Beis Hamikdash. 15 months, Shir HaMalos, the Bolivian sang while they were sitting.
You're in the process of Yom Ha'Chan at the Omer. Itself, connects it with.
Okay, so we're going to next, just a slight break. I'm going to shut off the Zoom and come right back on to the next class. We're just going to arrange for that. We'll have just a few minute break, and then we're going to do Tehillim chapter 19 and 20. Very exciting, because those are liturgical Tehillim. Okay, Chaver, I'll be right back.